talks like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animal, talking animal, talking animal. Must be an animal. Come hear the animals. Talking animals. Talking animals.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest today is Amy Howland, co-founder and co-director of Dogma Pet Rescue, a local nonprofit that places a premium on rescuing abandoned, abused dogs who may well be out of options without Dogma's intervention, might well be euthanized. Also, she's indicated to me in a couple of missives over the years that she is opposed to no-kill and wondered if I'd be interested in hearing her point of view. So we'll discuss Dogma Pet Rescue, her opposition to no-kill, and more when we speak with Amy Howland in a few moments here on Talking Animal. Later in today's show, we'll have a brief conversation with Kira Barrera, a Girl Scout leader from Troop 1858 in St. Petersburg. We spoke with back in January about the decision by these junior Girl Scouts to pursue their bronze award with a project about animal neglect and abuse. They've completed the project, and it's both multifaceted and truly impressive, so we'll hear a bit about that later on. Also, towards the end of the program, as the prize for Name That Animal Tune, we'll give away a copy of the new Eels album, The Cautionary Tales, of Mark Oliver Everett. Right now, though, let's hear an animal song. This is Madman Jones with Snake Charmer on Talking Animals. That was Madman Jones with Snake Charmer, a nutty romp of an animal song to kick things off this morning. Let's move now into our chat with Amy Howland of Dogma Pet Rescue, with a reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing us at dj@wmnf.org, or texting us at 813-433-0885. Let's welcome Amy Howland. Talking Animals. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning, Duncan. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for joining us in studio at good old WMNF for Talking Animals this morning. So before we delve into Dogma Pet Rescue and other topics, let's draw a little biographical sketch of you. Like, where did you grow up and what did animals mean to you as a kid?
Oh, everything. I grew up on the east coast of Florida. I moved to Tampa about 20 years ago. I worked at the Suncoast Seabird Sanctuary for about 7 years. Got into dog rescue about a decade ago by accident, like a lot of people do. And founded Dogma with my co-director, my co-founder in 2010.
Okay, let's go back a little bit from there. We covered quite a few decades in one breath there. So, but I gather from what you're saying that the animals were sort of always meaningful to you, even from childhood.
Oh, yes, from childhood, absolutely.
Did you grow up with a lot of animals around?
No, that was part of the problem.
Interesting.
Yeah, I was allowed to have one cat. I was never allowed to have a dog. I was never allowed to have a bird. So now...
And just the folks were not dog people?
Were not into pets so much. So I felt a little bit deprived. And now I am an adult and I can have whatever dog I want.
Right,
and
sure.
Encourage kids who might be listening. Hang on, you will grow up one day and you will be able to have your own pet.
Right. Some of the privileges of adulthood. Absolutely.
Exactly.
Yeah. Part of it, I guess, is sort of growing up dogless, if not relatively animalless. But
right.
But how did you sort of chart the path a little bit for us from that animalless, relatively speaking, mm-hmm. childhood to gravitating, for example, you mentioned working at Suncoast Seabird Sanctuary. So what was that path like? What brought you in that direction?
A lifelong love of birds and nature and being outside and having the benefit of growing up in Florida and having so much exposure to such a variety of birds, that was really my passion for a long time. It still is my passion. Birds are still absolutely a big part of my life. As far as dogs go, I never had a dog until I married my husband. My husband is very much a dog person. I didn't think I would really want to have a dog. A little bit of my parents in me still, I guess.
Okay, a little resistance, a little wariness.
And got a dog with my husband, and now we have our own dog rescue, which I'm sure he regrets every day. This is kind of my thing, not his.
I mean, that's kind of a big leap in a relatively short period of time to go from just getting a dog for really the first time in your life or adulthood to launching a dog rescue. So what was there a certain factor in going from, okay, now at least live with a dog, thankfully, after all these years of being deprived, to, hey, I'm going to now start a dog rescue? Were there a number of events that sort of precipitated that? Or?
Absolutely. That's a really good question. First, it was just the love of my puppy, Frankie, who is a black mouth cur mix and is still with us today, fortunately. And we got him through a rescue who turned out not to be a reputable rescue. He actually turned out to be a hoarder. I contacted Animal Services once I found out. I actually ended up speaking with Dennis McCullough, and this was about 10 years ago when he was the animal investigator, manager of the Animal Investigations Department. And we connected then, and he busted that particular hoarder. It was on the news, and I just kind of got dragged into dog rescue from there.
So in other words, that very bad experience. So you're saying Frankie came from this dog hoarder?
Frankie came from this hoarder.
Okay.
Right,
so then this led to this hoarder being pursued and busted. But still, to me at least, there's still a bit of a gap or a leap to go from, well, okay, I had kind of a weird situation adopting my first dog to... I'm now going to create a dog rescue. Were there other things that happened in the intervening period?
Definitely. The hoarder had actually dumped a litter of puppies in our yard with no food and water when we were on vacation. So we came back and found.
Did he do it in your yard because you guys had the relationship with Frankie, or why
yes,
your yard?
Yes, we think so. And it was. I think he had to get rid of the puppies very quickly because he had just been busted on the news.
I see.
And he knew we were a nice, safe home, which we are.
Okay. But did he know you were kind of partly responsible for him being busted?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
I don't think so. Dennis had told me he kept it confidential.
I believe everything
Dennis McCullough says. And, so we didn't know what to do with these puppies. We were overwhelmed. Hooked up with Lost Angels Animal Rescue. Mm-hmm. Kelly Wilson and I are still very good friends today. And I fostered with my co-director, Anne Marie Pearson, for about 2-3 years with them, and then we branched off into Dogma.
Okay, so it's still kind of zoomed along. So as you were kind of moving towards launching Dogma, mm-hmm. were there sort of guiding principles that you were developing as you were kind of hatching this plan?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, and what would be some of those?
We learned dog rescue from Kelly Wilson and Lost Angels Animal Rescue. We learned how to do dog rescue well. What we saw was a gap in the community. We wanted to create a community centered around dog rescue where different rescues and shelters network together to save as many dogs as possible, we wanted to really branch out and do more, to have more of an impact on our community than we felt we were having. We wanted to start more spay-neuter programs. We wanted to do more education, more community outreach, that kind of thing.
Sort of by inference, you're kind of suggesting that this was in contrast to, I guess, a lot of the dog rescues that you were accustomed to seeing locally?
Or? It's the same people, but no one was talking. Everyone was kind of an island. And I think what's happened over the past few years is everybody's really come together. Everybody in Hillsborough County and the rescue community works together. We all network dogs that maybe we can't take, but we know somebody else who can. We might know a dog in a shelter that somebody else can take. And I think that's really been effective. I think we've been able to save a lot more animals by working together like that.
Right. So I guess a key element, it sounds like a key tenet of sort of the dogma pet rescue.
Correct.
is the sense of community and the sense of sort of forging relationships and a network, and therefore that suggests better opportunities to place more dogs.
Exactly, exactly. We all do rescue our own way, but we all work together.
So, as I said, I guess in an introduction, it does seem that the dogs helped by dogma often tend to be ones that have had a rough, particularly rough go. Mm-hmm. I mean, any dog that needs a home is potentially had a rough go, but especially if they don't plan the home. But it sounds like there's even more sort of an emphasis at dogma on dogs that have been abandoned or abused. Is that a key kind of element of a focus, really, of the rescue efforts?
Yeah, definitely. Abused, abandoned, neglected. We call ourselves a rescue of last resort. The dogs typically have nowhere else to go. They come to us with health issues like skin conditions, heartworm positive dogs, that kind of thing.
And so how do they come to you? So are various organizations contacting you as part of the thing you just described with the mm-hmm. network? But let's say that there's a dog that's kind of maybe in the last phase of an opportunity, and if something doesn't happen, if dogma doesn't swoop in or something else, that they will be euthanized. How does that kind of just lay out for us how that actually works, how you're approached, who would approach you in that situation, mm-hmm. and then what happens typically?
All of our dogs come from the community. Most of them come from Hillsborough County Animal Services, which is now called the Pet Resource Center. I'm not used to that yet. I'm sure I'll make that mistake again today. But most come from Hillsborough County Animal Services. They have rescue coordinators there. We've worked with the rescue coordinators for a decade. They get out good dogs that have excellent personalities, that maybe have some health issue, maybe need an eye surgery, maybe are heartworm positive, maybe have a skin condition. They reach out to us, or we walk the shelters. I've been walking those kennels for a decade now, just checking out the dog, seeing what dog I can pull, what dog I think I can help, what dog is adoptable.
And as you walk those kennels, what is the key criteria, just visually? What is it that you see or identify that says to you, okay, I'm going with that one or these two or whatever? What are you particularly looking for?
A lot of times a happy wagging tail. A good eye contact from the dog is very important. Even a shy dog will make good eye contact. There could be a dog in the back of its kennel just shivering in fear. If I get good eye contact, if I can blow in its face and get a positive reaction, that's a dog I can take.
And so how much of it is just what you see visually that you've just described relative to what their story is, either on the kennel or that someone explains to you that works day to day?
Well, the stories are just, you know, they'll break your heart, absolutely. But most of the time it's visual.
Mm-hmm.
They're
so
all
what you
in
identify,
there for, they're
right.
all in there with bad
with the
stories.
Rough story. Right. So they're all pretty much in this relatively same boat in that regard. So
Correct.
Then within that you're saying, okay, here's one that I think we can take and, mm-hmm. and place a home. A place in a home.
Now, the exception to that is the dog fighting rings. When our animal control officers bust a dog fighting ring and they're able to save some of those dogs, they temperament test the dog before they come to us, before they hit the adoption floor. If we can take any of those, we do.
Let me let folks know this is Talking Animals. If you just tuned in, my guest is Amy Hallin, co-founder of Dogma Pet Rescue. If you'd like to ask Amy a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663 or email dj@wmnf.org, or you can text us at 813-433-0885. So what percentage then of the dogs that Dogma finds and places do come from Hillsborough County as opposed to other counties or other other sources?
Almost all of them. We only work with Hillsborough County and Hernando County pretty much exclusively. We started working with Hernando County Animal Services when Dr. Lisa Santonzi left Hillsborough and went to Hernando. Thankfully, Dr. Santonzi is back in Hillsborough. She's very much needed there, and they are getting an equally good vet at Hernando. We will only work with a shelter that is local in the area that has a good vet and has a reputable rescue coordinator, because it's important those rescue coordinators, with all the dogs coming into the shelters, advocate for the good dogs that aren't going to eat people or other animals. That's super important to us.
Yeah, seems like that would be a much more successful placement. Yeah. So what would be the timetable? So let's say you walked the kennels yesterday, let's say, mm-hmm. and you picked out on a typical trip, how many would you sort of identify? You said, okay, I think I like the looks of that. I think we can help this guy. This lady looks cute and needs me or whatever. And mm-hmm. How many would typical trip would there be? And then what happens from that point forward?
Usually I find about 10 dogs that qualify for our program that are happy, wagging tail, making good eye contact, all that good stuff. And if they don't get adopted, they come to me. And usually Hillsborough.
So you don't do anything at that moment necessarily. You're just sort of saying, okay, here's 10 that I have my eye on.
Right.
That I think I can help if they get to sort of the end of their period.
Correct.
Or okay.
Yes. And the rescue coordinator puts our name on it. And if the dog doesn't get adopted, it comes to me. And usually I'll get one or two.
Okay.
I have one coming to me tonight.
So the other eight or nine, does that mean that they then have been adopted in the meantime?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So, okay. So it's just sort of, as with anything else, sort of a percentage game. And then, so mm-hmm. once that one or two does come to you when their time is up, then what happens?
They're fostered in our homes. We have a network of volunteers. We have about 13 foster homes where they bring stray dogs from the shelter into their homes, nurture them, love them, take care of them, treat them like their own pack. And then we try to get them adopted from there. We go to adoption events. We have a website. We get a lot of contact on our website.
Cool. We should quickly say that that's dogmarescue.org.
Correct.
Over the 10 years or so, imagine a large number of dogs have sort of come and gone mm-hmm. Through this. Do you have a number that you could sort of calculate of how many dogs you've helped place in that
total?
Way?
Oh, easily, probably close to 1,000.
So 100 a year thereabouts, right?
Is probably, that, yeah. with my work with Lost Angels and with Dogma. Dogma's done about 850. We've
I
had
see.
About 850 come through our doors, get adopted.
Can you recall some specific kind of success stories, either because the dog in question had just such an awful story when you plucked them out,
mm-hmm.
And or where they wound up, or any combination, just things that I mean, out of 850 dogs,
yeah.
I'm sure they get a bit blurry, but on the other hand, I'm sure there's at least a good handful we think, oh, wow, I'll never forget this one.
I'll never forget any of them.
Yeah,
Duncan.
No, but I just mean there's usually particular
that's
stories.
Yeah, that's really hard, and I don't want to offend any of our adopters by picking one.
Right,
because I know
well, it's
a
less
lot
about
listening.
The adopter to me. I guess I'm curious more about the dog and like a particular rough story that,
absolutely.
Let's say, that placed them there through abuse or neglect, and then.
Right.
And they got kind of rescued in the most, you know, complete sense of that word.
Right.
And then landed somewhere. So, yeah, I'm not really asking so much about the adopters as,
oh, they get
as
very,
specific
they,
dog stories.
They get very
yeah.
offended about their dogs if I
sure.
don't mention their dogs.
All right.
But
all
there,
right.
there is.
Well,
there
it's going
was...
to take a while to run through 850, I think. But yeah.
Well, we had, we did have one from the Plant City dog fighting ring bust named Sandy, who was not a pretty dog, just a brown Florida brown hound. And from a fighting ring, it's difficult to get them adopted out. Obviously, from their history, people don't really want to take a chance on a pit bull that had been in a dog fighting ring. She got adopted to amazing people. She is now living in South Tampa in the lap of luxury. She has her kid. She has her toys. She has a beautiful life. And this is a dog who came from the worst of the worst. I think they busted like 26 dogs in that dog fighting ring.
And Sandy was one of that 20.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's thanks to our field investigations officers who they are the heroes. They do the amazing work.
And so I guess in an example like that, it's, I guess, important to ask, in terms of the other 25 dogs that were part of that ring, what kind of fate befell them, as far as you know?
10 got out. 10 tested appropriately and all got out. One is still looking for her forever home. Her name is Vicky. If anybody is interested in learning more about Vicky, contact me through the website and I'll put you in touch with the person who is fostering her. And the rest were just too ill or too aggressive.
Yeah, the training and stuff probably just couldn't be undone at a certain point.
Right.
Wow. And okay, so any other story kind of like Sandy that comes to mind? Because those are, I think those are really inspiring to hear about. And I'd like to think that people listening will say, hey, maybe I should get involved. Maybe I can foster. Maybe I can adopt one of these dogs that the Dogma has swooped in and helped.
Right. And there was another poodle named Armani that just touched everybody's life that he met. Little apricot poodle. Again, animal services investigators saved Armani. He was chained up on a porch for his entire life. He was completely matted down to his skin. His skin was pulling. He was so matted. Just a train wreck. Blind in one eye. And we pulled him, even though he was a little bit older and had some health issues, pulled him anyway, got him groomed, got him healthy, and he, again, got adopted to just a wonderful home.
Wow.
Nicest couple in Sun City Center. And unfortunately, Armani was not with him even a year. They lost him just short of having him a year.
Oh,
and
geez.
That's what breaks your heart.
Yeah.
You know, you want those dogs to have.
Right.
Now that they've
the nice
got the good
time
life.
That they've, yeah,
yeah,
after suffering
hang
through
on
the
here
other
for
thing.
A while
yeah,
longer. You
yeah.
know, so that really affected a lot of people.
I'm sure. Well, those are, you know, those are the stories that even before you find out Armani's no longer with us, they're sort of tearjerkers. And then,
right.
like you say, you think, okay, finally the guy's got a good situation, and then he was just probably went through too much hell,
right?
To keep going.
And Mr. and Mrs. Williamson, who had adopted Armani, said they were looking for another poodle after a few months, and I put out the call to Hernando County and to Hillsborough County. I'm looking for a poodle. I need a nice poodle, and sure enough, we got one, and now Sadie is living this fantastic life. So we love when people come back to
us
to adopt.
Yeah, no, that's great. Yeah. All right, so again, my guest is Amy Hallin, co-founder of Dogma Pet Rescue. We invite you to join the conversation, 813-239-9663 by phone. You can email us at dj@wmnf.org, or you can text us at 813-433-0885. So let's deal with some of the... Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Amy Howland.
Hi, Amy.
Hi.
Oh, this is Jerry Berryman. Over a year ago, I got a little red cattle dog from you. I adopted her, and we met at, I guess, a PetSmart, because I'm over in Pinellas County.
Mm-hmm.
She has been the joy of my life. And when I got her, she had clearly been used for pup, you know, as a puppy breeder. She had had bad front teeth. She
right.
had a scrawny tail. I renamed her Twig. Everybody who meets her loves this dog, and she has brought so much joy to my life. I now have 3 dogs, but I just want to thank you. It's lit up my heart and my life, and it's just incredible.
Oh, you're going to make me cry. I remember that dog. That was the dog I had named Nikita. Yes, I know. I know that dog. I think about that dog a lot. I'm glad she's doing so well.
Every day. I actually work with dogs. And
I remember.
And so it's been a joy for me, and everybody who meets her falls in love with her. Thank you for the good work you're doing. That's all I wanted to say. And I tell other people, this is the best way to get a dog.
Oh.
I mean, she saved me. She really did.
Well, that's very nice. Thank you very much for your call. That's very kind.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And let's see, one of our other emails on a similar note, maybe less specific, it just says, I love Amy Howland. She has taken some serious project off. So,
yes, that's true.
Yes. Okay, and then someone asked, well, I'll go back to this for a sec, just because this was sort of an offshoot of discussing Frankie and the hoarder situation. So this one says, I feel that animal hoarders get off too easy, and maybe if there were more strict penalties like mandatory minimum prison sentences, then the hoarders would be less likely to abuse and neglect animals. What does your guest think about this?
That's a really good question. That is such a tough situation. Hoarding used to, my husband is a mental health counselor, so I know a little bit, not a whole lot, but a little bit about the mental health aspect of it. Hoarding used to fall under the umbrella of obsessive compulsive disorder. And just recently, it's been assigned its own ICD-9 code for those in medical billing. That is its own separate illness. The problem with hoarding is they think they're doing a good thing. They think they're saving these animals. They don't think they're doing anything wrong. It's hard to put somebody in prison who has a big heart and thinks they're doing the right thing and is so horribly misguided. I don't know what the answer is. I know it's tough. I know we need to do more than we're doing, whether that's more mental health support for those people, more services available. That would be the way I would go as opposed to prison. But again, it's so hard. You leave them to their own devices and they tend to just go back to hoarding.
Amy, when you say that they think they're doing the right thing, does that in many cases translate to they sort of feel like they've got their own de facto rescue or shelter going? And that's why they initially maybe brought in some of that, hey, I can help out these animals. But because they're hoarders, suddenly the number just gets way too large.
And there was a hoarding situation recently in Hillsborough County where the woman had, I believe it was something like 80 cats, and they were all cats pulled off the last-minute euthanasia list. She thought she was saving them from euthanasia when the cats were in deplorable condition, rampant with disease,
And probably didn't recognize, I'm sure, that while doing a nice thing initially, she had put the cats into a
tough situation
that was probably going to circle back around, unfortunately, for most of those cats. All right. Thanks for your question, emailer. So, again, we're speaking with Amy Hallin from Dogma Pet Rescue. The website is dogmarescue.org, and there's pictures of a lot of the current candidates for new homes. And, of course, they're active on Facebook at Dogma Rescue. You can just go to Facebook and search Dogma Rescue. So Amy, this past weekend, a friend asked who the guest was on this coming week, and I gave him a brief sort of two-sentence summary. And he said, so she rescues dogs, but she's against no kill. And I know what he meant by this question, as I'm sure you do too. And, you know, one of the reasons, as you know, I invited you to be a guest on the show today is you've made it clear to me a few times through different communications that that you are opposed to no kill. So this is kind of an opportunity to present your viewpoint. So maybe you could just kind of outline your opposition to no kill.
Right. And I want to thank you for having me on. And I want to apologize just a little bit for some of those communications to you.
Well, they were rough, but I'm a big boy.
No, you handled it very well. Thank you very much. And thank you again for having me on to express a slightly opposing view. I want to say that I'm not against no kill completely. I think there are good things in the no kill plan. A foster program, a volunteer program, working with rescues. The problem in Hillsborough County is we already were doing that. We've been doing that here for going on 7-8 years. The problem with no kill, as I see it, is they start by saying pet overpopulation is a myth. I can't fathom that. I've walked those kennels in Hillsborough, as I said, for almost a decade. Pet overpopulation is not a myth. People think I'm anti-no-kill. They think I want to kill all the animals. They think I want all of the animals dead. Of course not. I've dedicated my entire adult life to saving animals, whether it's wild birds or companion pets. I just want to do it responsibly, safely, and sustainably. And I don't see those words equated with no kill.
Because here's the thing. I mean, just looking, since we're sort of talking about Hillsborough, and again, it's a tough battle, obviously, with save rates and the number of animals that have been euthanized. So regardless of what the launching point is about overpopulation being a myth or whatever, I mean, just looking at the hard numbers, because, again, you know, to me, and I'm sure probably some people listening, you describe with such great passion rescuing these dogs, and especially these dogs that are, let's call it, basically on death row.
Correct.
And if you're not taking them out of there, they're going into that chamber the next day or 3 days later, and then that's it. So there's this thing that still seems like a bit of a dichotomy to me of your zeal for rescuing dogs, finding homes for them, and making sure that they're not euthanize if they're otherwise ready to be in a home, and then a program that is among other things, devoted to cutting down the number of animals that are euthanized through a number of programs that boost their opportunity
right.
to find homes. So that's where I guess I'm still having trouble kind of reconciling what the viewpoint is.
And I can certainly understand that. It's a very complicated issue. My best friend died of breast cancer that metastasized into her bone. She suffered like I didn't know there could be suffering on this earth. I learned from that death is not optional for any of us. But suffering ought to be. And I think a lot of what happens with those animals who are turned out, turned away, I think there's a lot of suffering. There's torture. I think there's...
When you say turned away, what animals are we talking
every
about
Every no-kill now? Shelter is a limited admission shelter. They're not open access like Hillsborough County currently is. My hope is that Hillsborough County will remain an open access shelter. They will take in all the animals, as they should. Every no-kill shelter either turns away animals, they have appointments that people have to make to surrender their animals, they charge very high surrender fees to turn in their animals. These are animals that end up dumped in the woods. There was a no-kill shelter in Kentucky that actually went back to humane euthanasia because so many dogs were just taken home and shot in the backyard of the owners. I don't think there's anything wrong with humane euthanasia. Of course, I want to save them all. In a perfect world, I would absolutely want to save them all. We're not living in a perfect world. Hillsborough County Animal Services gets in 22,000 animals a year, saving 90%. I mean, is that what you're talking about when you say no kill? Saving 90%.
Yeah, I mean, no kill is a term that I think means slightly different things for different people.
Right.
But to flip it around, a save rate of 90% is the goal for a lot of people that are no kill practitioners, even if it takes obviously some time depending on where their shelter starts to get there, because often a lot of people who are embracing that are having high numbers of euthanasia.
Well, that's kind of the thing too. Hillsborough didn't have those high numbers. It wasn't as high as it was. It was continuously, the live release rate was continuously getting better year after year.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, since we're talking about Hillsborough County, I think in 2011, the euthanasia rate was upwards of 70%, 66%. And so a save rate of 34%. So as of last month, as of April, the save rate has moved up to 71, a little over 71%, 71.9%.
I want to say just out front, I can't trust the numbers. I can't trust the statistics coming out of animal services
What would you trust then?
Because it's not necessarily completely the new administration's fault. They got new software in that's just... The numbers just don't make any sense. I've looked at the spreadsheets over the past couple of months. They don't make any sense. So unfortunately, I don't think we're at a point where we can compare the success of animal services in Hillsborough to what's happened in the past. I do think...
Will there be a point at which you will accept the numbers?
God, because
you can't have this kind of conversation, whether it's, I'm not so sure about no-kill or I'm an advocate of no-kill, unless you talk about the numbers, because otherwise there's nothing else to talk about.
That's kind of the point.
Right.
The point of no-kill is all numbers. No-kill is all
right,
about
but so
numbers.
Then to dismiss the numbers, then you can't really have a conversation.
And that's not my fault. I can't dismiss the numbers. You could talk to county administration about that decision to switch from chameleon to pet point, which nobody seems to understand. But the problem with no-kill is it's all about the numbers. It's not about animal welfare. The situation in Manatee County is a brilliant example of how it's all about the numbers. Who cares where the animals go? And I do think at one point, absolutely, we will get to the place in Hillsborough where we can trust the numbers again. I don't know if we're there now. I'm not privy to those conversations. But I know at the Animal Advisory Committee for the past 2 months that's been a big point of contention. The numbers are not accurate. The numbers do not make any sense.
That's probably
a different conversation for somebody else.
Yeah, no, it has to be because if we can't accept the numbers that are presented as the current statistics and the comparative statistics from a few years ago,
I have a problem discussing it if we can't trust those numbers.
But here's something else that we can discuss that might circle around this, and we just have maybe another couple of minutes left here. But there are a lot of places across the country that are embracing no-kill, and that number is growing, I think, inarguably, over time. Mm-hmm. And I know that one of the things that led to sort of one of our less pleasant communications was when I had Rick Ducharme on, and Jacksonville and the overall area that, that Rick presides over has been sort of nationally recognized for their no-kill results. And I think since these numbers are, I think, indisputable, I think the first few months of this year, they are now at 91%.
Right, right.
So, so again, I mean, sometimes it takes a while for a shelter or a community or a county to get there, and those adjustments and growing pains can be rough for all parties, and there's a lot of leadership and other issues that further play into how well or how quickly this works. But, I mean, we do see it working, right?
But how? How is it working?
Well, it's working by virtue of killing a lot fewer animals.
They also limit intake, and that's the problem. They're turning away animals. They're advising people who are maybe desperate for a place to put their animal to list their animal on Craigslist. There is a big movement to get Craigslist to stop posting anything animal-related because of all of the criminal activity going on with those animals, because of the torture that those animals end up enduring at the hands of the wrong people. You can you just can't say to a county citizen, a taxpaying county citizen, no, we're not going to take your animal. Your animal is better off anywhere than here. It has to be a shelter. Shelter means a warm, safe place. Shelter means food and water. Even if it isn't for as long as we would like, they cannot turn away those animals. And that's I like Scott a whole lot. I like Scott. I think I'm very hopeful for animal services in Hillsborough, considering what we've been through for the past couple of years.
Right.
My biggest fear is limiting intake. Yeah. There has to be room for those animals.
All right. So we've got a few more emails and texts, and we're actually out of time. We got one call. Let me try to at least shoehorn in one or two things and see how we do here. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Amy Helen. Hello. It's
Hi.
You.
Hello.
Hi, it's you. We have a very brief time left. If you have a quick question or comment, please go ahead.
Well, I realize that what this lady is saying is going to not sit well with a lot of people, but they have to realize what's really going on, and she's 100% right. I've been in animal rescue. I've been in vet tech for 20 years, and what most people don't know is that the no-kill shelters, like maybe the Humane Society, get to be that way because they will get rid of what they don't want, like dumping it at animal services. They get to say they're no-kill because they don't kill them.
Somebody else does.
Somebody else does.
Right.
Somebody has to take in everything. You cannot have no-kill shelters unless there is a kill shelter nearby. It just is not possible. You can't just keep filling a cup and it's never going to overflow.
Right. And with 22,000 animals a year.
Yeah.
Right. Where are they going
to
go?
Society comes to animal services, takes puppies, takes cute little fluffy dogs, takes them to the Humane Society, and they get adopted from there. They bring old, sick, whatever, that they don't think they can adopt out. They take those to animal services. Animal services gets to be the bad guy.
Right.
The Humane Society gets to be the no-kill shelter. They get the donations and the great reputation. And people just don't think about, how is that possible? How can that work?
Okay, I'm so sorry. I, as I said at the beginning, we just had a time for a quick question or comment, or we're way over our time now. But thank you so much for your call.
Thank you.
Okay. So, Amy, let's see. There's a few things here. No kill boils down to one question. Are their fates worse than death?
Yes.
Okay. And what is that fate worse than death?
Just what I was explaining. The torture, the hoarding. Dogs neglected. Neglect is just as much of a form of torture as actual abuse to a dog, and I think a lot of that happens, or dog or a cat, absolutely.
Yeah, well, we're going to talk about neglect in a different sense, because these young Girl Scouts just did a project.
Oh, I can't wait to hear about that.
So,
go girls, that's awesome.
Yeah, so we don't run out of time to speak to them, do a few other things. I'm sorry, but we'll continue this another time, because it's obviously a complex thing.
I would like to get one more point in,
okay,
if you don't mind.
Briefly, because we're way over. Yeah.
No-kill looks at solving the problem at the end instead of the beginning. If we were talking instead about this no-kill, and we were talking about spay-neuter, here in 10 years, we could get there. If we had aggressive spay-neuter programs like New Hampshire and like Jacksonville, then we can talk about no-kill when we get the intake numbers down, when it's not a shell game with the numbers like no-kill plays. Spay-neuter, spay-neuter, spay-neuter. I want to retire one day.
All right, spay-neuter, I think we can all agree on that. Okay, this has been Amy Hallin from Dogma Pet Rescue, and the website again is dogmarescue.org, and they are on Facebook. You can search for Dogma Rescue. Thanks
Dogma
so
Pet
much.
Rescue, thank you.
Thanks so much. All right, in just a few moments, we will speak briefly with Kira Barrera about the Junior Girl Scout Troop. She helps lead in the educational project about animal abuse these Girl Scouts created in pursuit of their bronze award. Right now, let's step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner. Watching the Comedy Awards the other night and seeing Bill Cosby receive the Johnny Carson Award for Comedic Excellence underscored that comedians and comedy experts consistently name Cosby as one of the two or three all-time great comedians, as no less a comic than Chris Rock stated in introducing Cosby. So I thought we'd hear a vintage piece of animal comedy from him. This is Bill Cosby with the story of the chicken on today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
I was thinking the other day, which is really groovy. You have to do that every once in a while. You have to think. You know, just lay up in your bed and just think. When you don't have anything to do, you just think. And I started thinking about animals, because to me, they're really groovy because they don't talk or nothing. So I try to get into their brains to see what they're thinking. And I started thinking about the first chicken. Did you ever think about the first chicken? Not who came first, the chicken or the egg, because I really don't care. Because if there was an egg and the chicken came from it, who did the chicken have to learn from? Because when you think about chickens, they don't hang out with other birds. They hang out with the horse, you know, they walk around, how you doing, horse, how's everything? And they walk around with the cow, hey, cow, what's happening, how you doing, you know? And they ain't hanging out with the ducks or the robins or nobody like that. Robin Redbreast, names you learn in elementary school, Robin Redbreast. They're just hanging out with themselves. So I figure the first chicken had to be confused. You know what I mean? Because now, when they were first here, everybody got irked or pregnant. They were all swollen with child. So the chicken is hanging out with the horse and the cow, and they're all irked. And they're just proud, can't wait. The chicken's saying, oh, yeah, yeah, it's going to really be nice, don't you think? All of a sudden, the horse said, and there it was. A colt, you dig? And the colt is standing up, skinny-legged and everything. And you dig? And the chicken was really happy. But she said, oh, isn't that cute? It looks just like you. That is, it's just, oh, it's so, so happy for you. And the cow said, and there's a calf. And the calf, chicken said, oh, man, it looks just like, got a little bit of the father there. Yes, black and white spots. And oh, it's just, got, oh, mine is coming now. And they all looked and the chicken had to be confused.
All right. Chicken could be confused in that story, I'm sure. So that was Bill Cosby with the story of the chicken, taken from his album 20th Century Masters, The Millennium. Back in January, we spoke with Kira Barrera, leader of Junior Girl Scout Troop 1858 in St. Petersburg, that they had decided to pursue their bronze award with a project about animal abuse. So to hear about the results, I invited Kira to provide a little report this morning. So let's welcome Kira Barrera back to Talking Animals. Good morning, Kira.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us again on Talking Animals.
Thanks so much for having us.
Yeah. So when we spoke in January, the troop had decided to pursue the Bronze Award, sort of the highest honor for a junior Girl Scout, by creating this project about animal abuse. And so kind of briefly tell us what's happened since.
Well, the girls narrowed down the project to animal neglect and abandonment. And even still, it was kind of a shock for us to, you know, realize how broad of an issue and how difficult it really is to address. But they were passionate that that was what they wanted to focus on, because in the research they learned that, you know, that's the major reason for animals to be taken to shelters or, you know, needing help is due to this, you know, inability to care, or people are unaware of the commitment or things like that. So they spent months doing a lot of online research and trying to develop and figure out what resources we have in the community already to address this issue and kind of compiling and synthesizing all of that down. And I tell you, the girls, you know, learn so much about teamwork and compromise and dedication, because it really wasn't what they had originally thought they were going to be working on when we started out. But I think they were really successful. They created a brochure, and they were able to share that information at several events and at their schools.
Yeah, I guess we should say a couple things. Sorry to interrupt, Kira, but I'm holding the brochure in my hand, and it's beautifully done with a lot of great information about how to recognize animal abuse and neglect and ways you can help and places you can report when you do see neglect, abandonment, and abuse. And really, it's beautifully done, nice colors and photos and stuff. So an excellent thing. So I think there were events, big events, big well-attended events that you guys were able to hand these out to, right?
Yeah, it was amazing. You know, Girl Scouts as a whole is a nonprofit, but as troops, there's really no way to verify that. But everyone in the, you know, animal community welcomed the girls in and, you know, gave us a nonprofit spot, so it didn't cost the troop any money to go out and participate in information. We had a booth at an event called Racing for Rescues, and gosh, the girls had such a great time, and you know, we collected cards to share for on their little Facebook page that they made, so we could, you know, continue with the education and awareness on their issue. And it was a great experience.
Cool. Well, we just have just a brief moment maybe left, Kira, but among other things too that we want to be sure to alert people to who are hearing of this, want to find out a little bit more about what they're doing. And the ongoing thing is they also created a Facebook page, which people can just find by going to Facebook and searching for Stand Up for Animals Project. Again, like many parts of the project, it's still active, even though the brochure has been completed. And I understand some of the girls, at least, are still very involved with animals in the way that they've learned through this project.
Absolutely. There's several girls that this is definitely, you know, a strong passion for them, and they have lined up a few more volunteer opportunities to participate in throughout the summer. Pet Pal is having a big event in July at FERG, and there's also a family volunteering program, which we learned about through this project, at the Humane Society.
That's so great. Yeah, and you guys created an art piece, speaking of the Humane Society, too, as part of this. So this was really, this became, because when we spoke back in January, you guys kind of had a sense of where you wanted to go. But boy, in the ensuing months, it really mutated, but also broadened out considerably, which to everyone's benefit, the animals and the girls and the organizations and everybody that was kind of served by this. So a great project.
Thank you. It was such a beautiful experience.
Yeah. Well, so as I mentioned before, I'm a hugely pro-Girl Scout, big strain of Girl Scouts running throughout my family. So I just thought this was great on that level. But, of course, just the project that they chose to do and then how well it's turned out. So congrats to them from us. And we'll keep an eye on the Facebook page. And thanks so much, Kira.
Thank you. Thank you, Duncan.
All right. I'm Duncan Strauss. Towards the end of the show, we'll play Name That Animal Tune. The winner will receive a copy of the new Eels album, The Cautionary Tales of Mark Oliver Everett. We'll get to that in a moment on Talking Animals. Right now, let's quickly hit a few animal news and announcement items. First of all, kudos and big thanks to all my fellow WMNFers who were involved in any way with last weekend's wonderful tropical heat wave. Two fantastic nights of music and fun, discovering great new bands and enjoying great familiar bands. And, of course, the fun takes on an even greater proportion when you're lucky enough to be running around catching bands with Flea. But anyway, again, thanks and congratulations to all concerned. And we do, if you went, we do seek your feedback. Please complete the Tropical Heatwave Survey found in the blog section of WMNF.org. Also, wanted to follow up some of our announcements about Animal Coalition, and of course that was just riddled by that horrible arson fire. So on a limited basis, they have reopened a shot clinic that's starting Friday. They did this, and it's open from 10:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. They can provide some pet meds and shot clinic services, and they'll be adding more services soon. So this is at 1719 West Lemon Street in Tampa. And again, you can find out more by going to actampa.org. But glad to Here they're already rallying. And again, I want to remind you that there's all kinds of cool incentives to adopt black cats and other cats at Friends of Strays. So you can go to friendsofstrays.com to find out some of the particulars. And looking ahead a little bit, the 18th annual Scratch My Back benefit concert for Friends of Hillsborough County Animal Services is happening at Skipper's Smokehouse May 25th. Showtime's 5 p.m. Among those performing, Woody and the Woodtones, the Quivering Rhythm Hounds, and the Lint Rollers. So be sure not to miss that. You are listening to Talking Animals. It's time to play Name That Animal Tune. This is a giveaway. Do not need to become a WNF member to win. You don't need to be a WNF member, but we want you to become one. Come on, get with it. There'll be a copy of the Eels' new album, The Cautionary Tales of Mark Oliver Everett. The first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies the song. And really, you should be able to identify the song if you're going to win the new Eels album. So let's see. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals.
I can't look at the rocket launch, the trophy wives of the astronauts, and I won't listen to their words, 'cause I like birds.
All right, we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. I'll be back next Wednesday, May 21st, when my guest will be Alan Havey, comedian and actor best known at the moment as Lou Avery on Mad Men. Havey's also a longtime animal guy who not only regularly performs on benefits for various animal organizations and causes, he also serves on the board of directors of Friends of Animal Shelters. I hope you'll join me for that next Wednesday. Go to TalkingAnimals.net for a Facebook page, Twitter feed, like us on Facebook, the whole nine yards. You can also subscribe to the e-newsletter, find out about our guests a couple of days beforehand, and other news from the Talking Animals world. That's all found at TalkingAnimals.net. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. Alternative Radio is next on WMNF Tampa.